This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, I was delighted to hear from Trip Tweez that your patient has made some very desirable new acquaintances and that you seem to have used this event in a really promising manner. I gather that the middle-aged married couple who called at his office are just the sort of people we want him to know. Rich, smart, superficially intellectual, and brightly skeptical about everything in the world. I gather they are even vaguely pacifist, not on moral grounds, but from an ingrained habit of belittling anything that concerns the great mass of their fellow men, and from a dash of purely fashionable and literary communism. This is excellent. And you seem to have made good use of all his social, sexual, and intellectual vanity. Tell me more. Did he commit himself deeply? I don't mean in words. There's a subtle play of looks and tones and laughs by which a mortal can imply that he is of the same party as those to whom he is speaking. That is the kind of betrayal you should specially encourage, because the man does not fully realize it himself. And by the time he does, you will have made withdrawal difficult. No doubt he must very soon realize that his own faith is in direct opposition to the assumptions on which all the conversation of his new friends is based. I don't think that matters much, provided that you can persuade him to postpone any open acknowledgement of the fact. And this, with the aid of shame, pride, modesty, and vanity, will be easy to do. As long as the postponement lasts, he will be in a false position. He will be silent when he ought to speak and laugh when he ought to be silent. He will assume, at first only by his manner, but presently by his words, all sorts of cynical and skeptical attitudes which are not really his. But if you play him well, they may become his. All mortals tend to turn into the thing that they're pretending to be. This is elementary. The real question is how to prepare for the enemy's counterattack. The first thing is to delay as long as possible the moment at which he realizes this new pleasure as a temptation. Since the enemy's servants have been preaching about the world, world as one of the great standard temptations for 2,000 years, this might seem difficult to do, but fortunately they have said very little about it for the last few decades. In modern Christian writings, though I see much, indeed more than I like, about mammon, I see few of the old warnings about worldly vanities, the choice of friends, and the value of time. All that your patient would probably classify as Puritanism, and may I remark in passing that the value that we've given to that word is one of the really solid triumphs of the last 100 years. By it, we rescue annually thousands of humans from temperance, chastity, and sobriety of life. Sooner or later, however, the real nature of his new friends must become clear to him, and then your tactics must depend on the patient's intelligence. If he is a big enough fool, you can get him to realize the character of the friends only while they are absent. Their presence can be made to sweep away all criticism. If this succeeds, he can be induced to live, as I have known many humans live, for quite long periods, two parallel lives. He will not only appear to be, but will actually be a different man in each of the circles he frequents. Failing this, there is a subtler and more entertaining method. He can be made to take a positive pleasure in the perception that the two sides of his life are inconsistent. This is done by exploiting his vanity. He can be taught to enjoy kneeling beside the grocer on Sunday just because he remembers that the grocer could not possibly understand the urbane and mocking world which he inhabited on Saturday evening. And contrariwise, to enjoy the bawdy and blasphemy over the coffee with these admirable friends all the more, because he is aware of a deeper spiritual world within him which they cannot understand. You see the idea? The worldly friends touch him on one side and the grocer on the other, and he is the complete, balanced, complex man who sees round them all. Thus, while being permanently treacherous to at least two sets of people, he will feel, instead of shame, a continual undercurrent of self-satisfaction. Finally, if all else fails, you can persuade him, in defiance of conscience, to continue the new acquaintance on the ground that he is in some unspecified way doing these people good by the mere fact of drinking their cocktails and laughing at their jokes, and that to cease to do so would be priggish, intolerant, and, of course, puritanical. Meanwhile, he would, of course, take the obvious precaution of seeing that this new development induces him to spend more than he can afford and to neglect his work and his mother. Her jealousy and alarm and his increasing evasiveness or rudeness will be invaluable for the aggravation of the domestic tension. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
All righty, and back at it again, Screwtape Letters Podcast. We're here talking about letter number 10. Talks a lot in this episode about our relationships. It talks about, basically, it's an episode about choice of friends, value of time, worldly vanities, things of that nature.
Yeah, I actually made a note when I was listening through this, which I noted domestic tension. And I think domestic tension plays out, especially for people in a Christian life, and you see it in the work world with DEI and all that they do in companies now, which is leave your Christianity at home. You know, don't bring that to the office. Don't bring that into the workplace. And just, if you can, just try not to be a Christian while you're working for us. Which is amazing, actually, the demonics working on that side, because I don't think anyone would say to a Muslim, hey, just leave your Muslim stuff at home and just don't bring that to the office.
But for Christians, it's kind of expected that we're supposed to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's actually the one religion where, like, if you were Sikh, Buddhist, or whatever, they'd be like, oh, let's have a party for you. We'll do once a month.
Right.
You know, but not for, so I really saw that as a theme within this. And
because when we stand up for, you know, this is talking about basically being a Christian at home and at church, and then also being that same version of a Christian publicly.
Correct.
And a lot, not having a two-facedness about us.
Yeah.
you know, he talks in this episode. He basically sets it up what seems to be like a husband-wife couple that work at his office or something like that. So it's basically some people that he's gotten close with who presumably aren't Christians and engage in typical, you know, a co-worker relationship.
Well, yeah, I think these are people that come into his life at a point where they make him feel complex. They make him feel, you know, knowledgeable and interesting, and that's alluring to him. But it's got nothing to do with his walk with faith. So he takes that on, like, you know, I think there's a few things in there that they say, you know, they're superficially intellectual. So they probably know enough, but...
Which basically just means the reply guys on Twitter, the reply guys on X, and they're like, everyone's got an opinion about how terrible, you know, everything in the news is. But it's a very superficial conversation. I think a lot of us can relate to that. A lot of us have friendships. Maybe it's a coworker. Maybe it's somebody you see on a daily basis that you don't take it too seriously. And the whole relationship just lives in that superficial realm. It's a pretty common thing, I think.
Absolutely. And when he talks about them, that they mock the world, that these people also, you know, they probably mock religion, and they definitely mock, you know, the working class at the time. Who do they think they are? And he talks about them as everything they do as being higher than the common man, even to the point of him saying they enjoy their coffee together. Now, we may think of coffee today, you know, 2024, as being, you know, why would that stand out? Because in the late 1930s, early 1940s, coffee probably wasn't a common man's drink. You know, you'd be lucky if it was tea with no milk.
Okay.
You know, but coffee was more of a high society thing. So again,
so there's an element of haughtiness in this.
Haughtiness, yeah. That's the term I was looking for.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, that's a big part. And I think there's the leaning within him of wanting to fit in. Not just...
Right.
You see the way C.S. Lewis writes about when he's in church, that he looks around and he sees the grocer and the butcher and the lady down the street who... And he's like, and he has this sense already built in that he's better than them. But now he meets these people who he thinks he's on their intellectual level, and he wants to fit in, which is a natural failing, I think, of all of us.
Right. Well, I think it's definitely very natural, because when you come to Christ, when you get saved, and we all have something that we want to be, especially like, think good Christian, you go to church, you hear a message, you're on fire for the Lord, you want to be that throughout your entire life. And the fact of the matter is, it can be difficult. The demonic is literally trying to exploit every moment once you leave the church building to try to pull you away and create a dichotomy between what you want to be. You know, Paul says, everything that I don't do, everything that I don't want to do, I do. And I think it's interesting, he talks about co-worker relationships, because you'll spend one day a week in church on a Sunday, and then maybe a second day for a midweek program in most churches in the country. But a lot of people, say your coworkers or your friends or the people that you spend the bulk of your time with, you may very well easily have people really outweighing the influence in your life in a common setting like the workplace to really outweigh the positive impact of church.
That's a really great thought. I'd never thought of it along those lines, because if you think of it as scales, and on Sunday you put Christianity into your life, so it's now tilting towards that, but then all week long with no other Christian influence, now the scale starts to tip,
right?
With TV and the news and social media and just the constant, you know, drumbeat of the world, that then tips the scales. And I don't think Sunday can continue to tip it back to level, or even put it in a way that Christian side of the scale is big enough and powerful enough to to do you justice.
To become the balance and weight of who you are ultimately.
Right.
And I think this guy is probably striving to do the right thing. And this is just something we all struggle with. We've probably all encountered this dynamic. I've experienced at times when, like, I had a friend... Or like a friend group from a previous season of life. And then I had a season in my young 20s when I really became a lot more serious for the Lord. I mean, God kind of brought me back to church,
yep.
rekindled a relationship with Christ. And then I started to become a new person. But then who was I going to be? The person that I was trying to become as I was following Christ, or the person that I was previously in that friend group? And it takes some time to really be having good characters, being consistent. I'm the same person
yes.
here as I am there. I'm the same person when things are good as when they're bad. I'm the same person when I'm in church than when I'm, you know, hanging out with my friends at a ball game. And it's difficult. Character doesn't build itself. It takes a lot of intentionality and discipline to really identify the things that are pulling us and impacting us. And nothing does that more than our friends.
What's really interesting is this idea of wanting to fit in. If you think about how that is framed in modern times, this idea that you should always just try and fit in, don't rock the boat, don't come with, don't talk politics in a...
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping, and this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Place where you shouldn't, or don't talk religion in a place where you shouldn't. I think, to your point about character, you should be true to who you are all the time.
Well, and the world is doing it. I mean, for crying out loud, you can't go into, you know, a restaurant in the month of June without seeing a rainbow flag. Like, everyone else gets to be true to who they are. Like, I'm not trying to shove religion in anybody's face.
Right.
I just want to be realistic about the fact that I believe in God. I follow Jesus. I'm not really crazy about all the, you know, a lot of the things that the world would find funny or entertaining. And
right.
It's just, I don't want to live obnoxiously counterculturally, but I want to try to live honestly and consistently.
So this is a challenge to listeners, which is when you find yourself in a sitting around a table with people or just communing with others, and all of a sudden the conversation goes to a place where you're not comfortable because it conflicts with your Christian life, I don't think you get up and leave, because I think you don't abandon that situation.
Sure.
But you don't give in either.
Right.
You make
right.
them aware that, I'm sorry, but, like, you know, my part of my Christianity, this isn't a conversation I'm comfortable with. Now, they might be like, well, leave, then fine.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely, right? But you may actually find that, let's say there's five people at a table, that two of them say, you know what?
Yeah,
you're right.
Me too, actually.
And,
yeah.
Right. And,
right.
And then you're strengthening that faith around the table.
So here's the thing. My pastor says this. He says this phrase a lot. Fear is contagious. So social fear and social pressure is contagious.
Yes.
So is courage.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Yeah.
So be willing to stand up and speak. You know, one area, to just give a little example, and again, I'm by no means like a perfect example of the amazing Christian, but one area where I've just become a little bit more bold in speaking up, and I don't do it all the time, but when I find people like taking the Lord's name in vain, when people say Jesus Christ is a swear word.
Yeah, as a pejorative, yeah.
I kind of take objection to that. And I oftentimes don't say, I really rather not hear that, you know, that phrase used in that way.
In that way,
I mean, if they're going to be so bold enough as to say something that I find offensive or objectionable, I can be very tactful and appropriate in saying, I don't really want to go along with that or whatever it may be.
Yeah, no, and you have to. So that thread of domestic tension, I think it's something that people need to look out for within their world, because you don't want to be like the character in here is, that all of a sudden he has two personas.
Right.
One that is live in this aristocracy, highfalutin life, and the other one is where he's more down to earth. He's a churchgoer. He's a family man. But now he's got this conflict going. And I think that definitely the DEI movements caused it at work to force people into that. And you've got to fight back against it. And I just recommend finding people within your work world who you can pray with at work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it makes a huge difference. And there are people there.
There are people there.
I mean, so I think sometimes we can see too much ground to the enemy, as if, like, anywhere we go, we're the only Christian. And it's like, that's just not true. Yeah. We just need to be bold enough and wise enough to do it. You know, it talks about that scripture says a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And this type of social dynamic is driving Christians to be this on Sunday with this group of people and this other thing the rest of the week with this other group of people. I think let's bring the two together.
And I think the more people walk with Christ, you find that two sides of that dynamic, and I think a lot of us have those two sides, that one side starts to shrink as you become more consistent with your walk with faith.
Yeah.
And that's really good. And I even see... I've had a foul mouth in the past, but the more I walk in faith, the more that constricts.
Or starts to fall away.
Yeah, it does.
I
find myself, you know, not cursing and being more respectful. We talk about this in mentoring. It's a process.
It's a process.
Gradual.
But I think the biggest thing is, you know, throwing a little application here, activating your mind to see the dynamic. And that's why this chapter is really helpful, because it calls out the demonic game that's constantly being played. He's always pulling those strings of the social pressure of choosing friends, valuing your time, and what the world places value on. Now, I want to ask you actually about an interesting phrase, one that might not be too common to an American audience. He talks about Puritanism.
Right. So interestingly, with this is something that was very common in England. And if you look back at the founding of America, the Puritans were the people who tried to blow up King James and Parliament in England. And when King James found out who it was that was trying to do it, now we actually have a night, November the 5th in England, called Guy Fawkes Night, where they still to this day burn in effigy Guy Fawkes, who was a Puritan, and they burn him in effigy every November 5th. Still,
is that remember the 5th of November?
Yeah, it's bonfire night, right? So, and that's why. So those people escaped to Holland, and then they got on boats and they headed to America, and they founded colonies over in America. In a lot of ways, they were some of the first domestic terrorists in that respect. But to be Puritan or to be puritanical was to be almost like everything you did was very overtly
religious.
Maybe some of the Puritans really had a great walk with Jesus and a great walk with faith. But they didn't have, when we talk about those two sides, they couldn't have anything that wasn't of a religious nature, they would not engage with at all. So they had very strict rules around everything, and they were very hardcore within their belief system.
Well, I think one of their main goals was to purify society. So they were constantly calling out evil and wrongdoing, and it became anyone near them probably would have had a little bit of an anxious presence that they were constantly going to be called
out. Because it was not always biblically based. I think this is where as from what I understand about Puritanism, this is where that went off tracks, is because things that weren't even within Scripture or that didn't have any biblical basis, they were all of a sudden damning a person for being that, and maybe even twisting some Scripture so that they could stand on a higher moral ground,
mm-hmm.
which I think turned a lot of people off. But yeah, it was used as a pejorative, and C.S. Lewis talks in here about how the demonics use that word to pull people, pull people away from their walk with Christ by, oh, you're puritanical. And in today's word, the idea in England, we call them Bible bashers, or here they call them Bible thumpers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same slight is used today for people who are very Christian. Oh, you're one of them. And
right.
Yes, I am one.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am.
But which would be the best response. Right.
But I think it is good to note not being that oppressive religious culture, because just as much as a culture of worldliness will always rise up, a culture of religiousness will always rise up as well. And it's our job to be salt and light and really navigating those relationships, whether it's friendships, whether it's how we conduct ourselves at work. How do we do that in a way that we're not endorsing or engaging in every little silly, petty, secular, naughty thing, so to speak, but also not being an overbearing religious spirit to the world?
Well, I think it's, if we look back biblically at the Pharisees the scribes, Pharisees, and there's another one, right?
Sadducees.
So, if we look back on the world at the scribes, the Pharisees, and the Sadducees, and the way they were depicted within the Bible, I think they're even talked about in that as being so sure that they know God's will all the time that even Jesus rebukes them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a balance in there. Now, what that balance exactly is, I think everyone has to pray on it, and you have to really understand your Bible as much as possible, but know that if Jesus was rebuking them, what were they doing that was putting them in that position? Was it in the same way that Puritans were seen as that they knew above everything else what God's will was and how everyone should react?
And they were going to be policing us for all of society.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is really identifying where's your fear? Do you have a fear of God? Do you have a fear of man? And being able to just walk that balance wisely, I think identifying the areas in life where you need to not walk too far on one side or the other. I think one of the calls for the church in the world today is that Matthew 10 concept, being wise as a serpent, but gentle as a dove. And I think navigating a lot of these friendship relationships is very important, because you can be a turnoff to bringing people to Christ if you're an overbearing religious spirit, constantly calling everyone out for their sin. If you're too puritanical.
Yeah, right.
But that doesn't mean you have to engage it and endorse it. So be, strive to live a life of a consistent character, being the same person, behind closed doors as you are to the world.
No, absolutely. So, yeah, that's the domestic tension side of this. There's really a point in everyone's walk where the more they fall in love with that relationship with Jesus, that they want to express it more. And when that happens, they are going to get pushed back. They're going to feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have some very strange moments, especially in groups that saw them as that other person and now as the someone walking with faith. And that's going to be tough. And for everyone listening, you're going to go through that as you change. And it may come down to changing friend groups.
Right. I think that's kind of one of the calls to this episode is really look at your friends. Show me your friends and I'll show you your future.
Correct.
Is one of the go-to sayings that's really shaped my life and philosophy. And I like to think of it as like the five people that you spend the most of your time with. Take those five people and average them together, and that's what you're going to be. I think that's a law kind of built into creation.
So. Yeah.
That you're not going to be able to change that. So the people that you spend the bulk of your time with, average those together, that's really what you're going to become. So I think it's a good opportunity for Christians to look at putting people in different categories. Who do I want to be in my inner circle, the ones that I'm going to let impact me and influence me? And who in my life do I need to start putting in an outer circle a little bit more? Or put in a category of people that I'm not going to be as inclined to give into the social pressure to go along with however that conversation goes or going wherever they want to go. And I think there's also even a little bit of a sense of urgency to do that. He mentions twice in this chapter, Screwtape is kind of giving coaching to just delay as long as possible the moment he realizes his new pleasure temptation. Or just kind of don't let it come to his attention so quickly.
You should become more ingrained with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Just delay the process. But I think there is a sense of urgency to get serious and get ready to get walking in the direction that the Lord has us to walk.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's letter 10. We'd love to hear your feedback. Come to the website, screwtapeletterspodcast.com. Give us your feedback. Engage with us. We reply to everything that's posted on there. So until next time, we'll see you again on the Screwtape Letters.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.